proposed Medicaid expansion ballot initiative did not collect enough signatures to make it onto the November ballot. Good evening, I'm Corin Cates-Carney.
And I'm Conrad Scheid, and that's tonight's top story on Montana Evening Edition. Authorities say an argument over truck repairs prompted a Ronan man to allegedly murder his own brother.
And reporter Catherine Fry tells us about some of the impacts northern Montana's wild weather is having on rivers this week. Organizers of Healthy Montana Initiative, an effort to expand Medicaid to 70,000 Montanans, announced today the measure will not qualify for November's ballot. Healthy Montana Initiative President Kim Abbott vows the effort to expand the state and federal program that helps poor people pay Medicare does not end with today's announcement. The initiative would have required signatures 5% of the total number of qualified voters in the state, including the support of 5% of voters in each of the 34 legislative House districts, for a total of 24,175 signatures. Abbott says the campaign collected 25,000 signatures, but the internal quality assurance analysis showed they would have needed 32,000 signatures by tomorrow's deadline to qualify for the November ballot.
We're really, really proud of what we accomplished, but the clock ran out on this effort. We faced some delays early on, and we don't get more time because we face delays. Those aren't the rules. You know, our campaign plays by the rules. On day 30 of the 30-day initiative review process, the Attorney General called us in and said he was going to deem our ballot initiative legally insufficient. So we decided to refile, and that really cost some time that we can't get back. Then we faced a Supreme Court challenge to our initiative that really threw our campaign into legal uncertainty. You know, we had to talk to lawyers and try to figure out what to do, and that cost us about a week.
Abbott says I-170 may be dead, but the issues of expanding Medicaid in Montana has tremendous support among voters, and the momentum at the moment to do just that will continue.
Our conversations that we had and the commitment of our volunteers and the commitment of rural hospitals and clinics has only grown. And the bottom line is, on our campaign, we had to regroup and work around barriers and obstacles a few different times. And so the initiative, the deadline, is something that we can't work around. However, we have built momentum, and we're going to go into the summer and keep our volunteers engaged, keep them talking about this, and keep the pressure up. So no, we're not done, and I do think that we have momentum coming through this. And obviously, it's disappointing that this won't appear on the ballot, but I really do think that all of the conversations that we had, all of the support that we obtained through the campaign, will move us forward, and we'll get this done for Montana.
Democratic Governor Steve Bullock supports expanding Medicaid, but the 2013 legislator rejected the idea. Opponents essentially said Medicare expansion would eventually cost the state too much money and would be an unnecessary expansion of the Affordable Care Act.
In other news from around the state, officials say an airplane that crashed near a western Montana ski area, killing its pilot, was an antique that was being flown to Montana from Florida. Ravalli County Undersheriff Steve Holton says the twin-engine Grumman G-21 Goose amphibious plane had been flown from Florida to Minnesota before 62-year-old Michael Bloom of Burnsville, Minnesota, took over to bring it to Hamilton. The plane crashed and caught fire Tuesday in the parking lot of the Lost Trail Ski Area Lodge near the Montana-Idaho border. National Transportation Safety Board investigator Larry Lewis said the airplane appeared to come straight down into the ground, and there was no evidence the pilot had tried to land. Holton says the plane made stops in Dillon, Montana, and Salmon, Idaho, before the crash.
A 19-year-old University of Montana student who was burned in a weekend explosion was hospitalized in critical condition and needs skin grafts. Steve Keller of Great Falls tells the Missoulian his son, Matt Keller, was scheduled to undergo skin graft surgery today at the University of Utah Burn Unit. Keller says his son suffered second-degree burns to his face, head, hands, and legs when a woman poured unnatured alcohol on the bonfire early Sunday after his son told her not to. Police apparently weren't called. Steve Keller said he reported his son's injuries to Missoula police on Monday. The bonfire was held at the University of Montana-owned housing the female student was renting. UM spokeswoman Peggy Kerr says the university lease agreements do not allow open burning or burning of candles.
Prosecutors in northwestern Montana say an argument over truck repairs led a Ronan area man to shoot his brother to death. KERR-AM reports 53-year-old Harry Lazo appeared before District Judge Kim Christopher in Polson today to be arraigned on a charge of deliberate homicide in the shooting death of 51-year-old Terry Lazo. However, the hearing was delayed until next Wednesday because Christopher had prosecuted Lazo in the 1990s when she was the Lake County attorney. Court records say Edward Stasso told investigators that he, his girlfriend, and Terry had gone to Harry's house on Saturday to retrieve Terry's pickup truck. Harry was supposed to be working on it, but Stasso says Terry didn't think he was doing the work. Stasso told investigators that Harry shot Terry in the head with a rifle after the two argued.
State and federal wildlife officers are investigating the death of three grizzly bears found in Ferndale area east of Flathead Lake. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Park spokesman John Farley says because of the ongoing investigation, no more information about the dead grizzlies was being released. Anyone with information about the death of the grizzlies can contact 1-800-TIP-MONT. That's 1-800-847-6668. Callers can remain anonymous and may be eligible for a reward. FWP also announced today that wardens euthanized a black bear on June 10th after the yearling had become aggressive in seeking food from campgrounds in the Lake Mary Ronan area west of Flathead Lake.
Record-breaking rains in the Flathead keep the rivers high and cause the National Weather Service to call for caution. Kalispell broke two records for rainfall back-to-back this week, one of which had been set in 1939. Meanwhile, the forest is calling for sunny, warm weather, but the rivers are expected to remain muddy. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry has more on what this means for some of the recreation in the area.
Co-owner of Glacier Outdoor Center and Raft Company, Jeff Baldelli, says June is kind of like this.
This isn't really too out of the ordinary from what we've seen. In both the rafting and the fishing community, we deal with this. Every May and June is the spring runoff, and it's just a cycle that happens, and as soon as it's kind of run its course, the water will start clearing up and the rivers will become more fishable.
The West Glacier-based business runs guided raft trips down the middle fork of the Flathead River and fishing trips on the middle and north forks of the Flathead River throughout the summer.
I mean, right now the rivers, they're pretty muddy. They're really dark, muddy. The river's moving pretty fast. I think today the river's right around 13,000 CFS, which that's cubic feet per second, and that's just kind of a gauge of how much water is flowing through at a specific spot. You'll see some debris. This time of the year, it's common to see, logs, trees floating down the river. And those are definitely something that you have to look out for when you are on the river, because those are pretty much the biggest hazards.
Baldelli says they haven't had to cancel any trips. He says they closely watch the middle fork of the Flathead River when it's running 6 to 7 feet, and they restrict the age of rafters who can come. He says right now it's running at about 6.5 feet.
The water's really cold at this time of the year, and it is moving fast, so we just don't want to take any chances out there with any youngsters.
Baldelli says they're not guiding any river fishing trips.
Right now, fishing, we've kind of decided to not fish the rivers, and we fish more of the lakes. There's a few lakes around here that are really fun and productive in the spring, and it's just kind of too dirty in the river to waste our time fishing there.
The National Weather Service is calling for the clearing skies of Thursday to continue over the next couple of days, with a high pressure system coming in and temperatures moving up from the 40s of midweek to the 80s. However, it's also calling for rivers and streams to remain high and muddy through the weekend, with the greatest concern the north, middle, and main stems of the Flathead River. Meteorologist Luke Robinson says they're not expected to crest flood stage.
Most of the runoff has already occurred, and the rivers have already crested as high as they're going to get, and they're steadily dropping.
The Kalispell area broke records this week for the amount of rainfall. Tuesday, a record of 1.45 inches of rain fell, and on Wednesday, 1.16 inches of rain fell, breaking the old record of 0.78 set in 1939. Baldelli says their main season really kicks off this weekend and runs through August, with fishing trips continuing into the fall. He says more than the weather forecast, they'll be looking at when the muddy waters give way to clear currents.
This is just a part of the cycle. It is the rainiest month of the season, and we still go rafting. My partner, Darwin Stoneman, actually, he always has a quote that he says, is anybody can go rafting in the sunshine, but so it takes a real river warrior to get out there in the rain.
Robinson says the rain and lingering snowpack are reasons why the rivers will keep running high and fast for the next several days. He says in the Flathead, snowpack is a little over 200% of normal. Robinson says the rivers should be back to near normal for this time of year by the beginning of next week. Katrin Fry reporting from the Flathead.
A Montana-based company that says it provides a sustainable metal processing technology announced this week it'll be headquartered in Missoula. Metals U.S. President and CEO John Hammond says metal processing or separation is an important issue across many different industries.
especially in the environmental industry, where you have metal contaminants in water like the Berkeley Pit in Montana here. In the mining industry, mining companies want to be able to remove metals from their streams and do purifications more efficiently and have zero discharge processes, and we can offer that. All sorts of industrial recycling where you have mixed metal streams and you need better ways to separate the metals. And we have a patented technology that can do it with much smaller units, lower operating costs, lower capital costs than the available technologies.
Hammond says Metal US has received private sector and government funding to develop the nanotechnology that drives the metal recovery tech. It's now working to put commercial units into operation. And Hammond says Missoula is the ideal town for the company. For one thing, the Hammonds are a local family. He adds Missoula also has a strong culture of environmental consciousness.
And wanting to see better processes put in place in industry and for environmental remediation. And that combined with Montana's historic mining legacy, where there have been a lot of mining processes that have gone on that haven't been as clean as they should have been and that we're now making efforts to clean up. The combination of those two things, I think, really makes Missoula ground zero for the kind of mentality that we're pursuing at Metals US, that metal processing can and should be done cleaner and in a more environmentally friendly fashion.
Once underway, Metals US hopes to create about 120 jobs, positions Hammond says would pay well and be Montana-based. Pay range depends on position, but he says junior-level employees could earn somewhere in the neighborhood of $35,000, while more skilled employees could earn six figures.
The White House has announced a new push to boost international tourism in the U.S., an effort the Montana Office of Tourism says is already underway. According to a recent White House report, the U.S. leads the world in international tourist exports, but also ranks second in annual international visitors. A record 70 million tourists came to the U.S. last year and spent more than $4,000 each, supporting 1.3 million jobs. The Montana Offices of Tourism, or MTOT, hopes to localize the benefit of economic development and job creation. According to the Institute for Tourism and Recreation Research at the University of Montana, the state saw 1.8 million international travelers who spent nearly $440 million in 2013. The MTOT has partnered with Brand USA, a corporation established by Congress in 2011 to boost international tourism. Brand USA hopes that their website, discoveramerica.com, will turn into a one-stop shop for tourists looking to come to the U.S. Daniel Iverson, Public Information Officer for the Montana Office of Tourism, says Brand USA helps streamline the advertising process. Instead of 50 different states looking to attract international tourists with 50 different advertising campaigns, potential travelers can point and click on pictures and information and develop travel plans on one single website.
And so that's where we come in at that point. Once we've got them interested in coming to the U.S., MTOT is saying, okay, come to Montana. And so they offer a number of programs that we can participate in. A lot of it has to do with advertising, you know, traditional print and out-of-home advertising, as well as on their website. And so those are some of the opportunities that we've taken advantage of in the past. And coming up in this next fiscal year, we're looking at increasing our budget. And part of the motivation for that is so we have more resources available to do additional things with Brand USA.
Several Montana tourist locations can be found on the website's homepage, including the Little Bighorn Battlefield National Monument and the Beartooth Highway. Another benefit of the partnership, according to Iverson, is the ability for smaller Montana tourist destinations and even cities to partner with the MTOT and buy prominent advertising on the government site. He hopes travelers will explore sites in Montana other than perennial hotspots like Glacier and Yellowstone National Parks.
They've always been and will always be our biggest pillars and most recognizable destinations in the state. But we're really focusing on spreading out the travelers across all four seasons and across the whole state, trying to get them a little bit farther out from those national parks and especially into eastern Montana. We've highlighted some state parks pretty prominently. Mikoshika State Park and the Terry Badlands, for example, are some of the locations that we've featured in our advertising.
The office also hopes to continue attracting film studios to Montana by highlighting state grant programs and tax incentives in addition to the Montana landscape.
In tonight's forecast, west of the Divide tonight should remain mostly clear with some patchy fog and lows in the upper 30s to mid-40s. Friday, it'll be partly cloudy with a chance of thunderstorms and rain showers with more patchy fog, highs in the mid-70s to lower 80s. In central Montana tonight, expect mostly cloudy skies in the evening, becoming partly cloudy after sunset with isolated rain showers and lows of 45 to 50. On Friday, look for partly cloudy skies with a slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon, highs 70 to 80. In southwest Montana tonight, it'll be partly cloudy with lows 40 to 45 and gust of winds up to 35 miles an hour in the evening. On Friday, there'll be increasing clouds with a chance of showers and thunderstorms and highs 70 to 80. And now for the editorial comments of Patricia Rosenleaf.
How many times have you heard a parent say, "I can't get my kids to eat vegetables"? Well, this is, unfortunately, sometimes true. Over the last 2 years as a food corps service member at Highlight Elementary School in Bozeman, I've heard and experienced the exact opposite. Just last week, I had to ask a kindergartner to stop eating spinach. He was picking it from the school gardens and shoving it into his mouth so fast that I feared he would strip every plant of its leaves, leaving none for others to try. What a quandary, having to ask a child to stop eating his vegetables. Every day, I have the privilege of helping youth form enduring relationships with real food through lessons in the school gardens, cooking classes, field trips to local farms, or taste tests paired with nutrition education. I've come to believe that connecting kids to where their food comes from in a hands-on, engaging outdoor environment can be the key to creating healthy, sustainable communities. When a kindergartner plants the spinach seed, waters it, watches it sprout and grow, and finally harvests it straight from the ground, he or she has a personal connection to the leafy green and is therefore more likely to try it and even devour it, as I have witnessed many times. Watching kids shove this calcium and vitamin-rich superfood into their mouths, then ask for seconds or thirds, has convinced me of the power of school gardens to foster lifelong healthy eating habits. The students say it best, "You just made me love spinach. I used to hate it, but this is the best spinach I've ever had." And it's not just spinach. One parent asked me, "Are you the one planting with the students? My son wouldn't touch vegetables, and now he's raving about radishes." After the students made a salad using kale from the gardens, another parent told me that her son wouldn't eat anything green before this, but now he likes kale so much that he wants to eat it every day. Our hands-on approach to growing, preparing, and tasting vegetables has translated to the school lunch program as well. Teachers report that their students choose a wider variety of fruits and vegetables and are more willing to try unfamiliar foods than they were a year ago. Given the chance, kids can be much more adventurous tasters than we give them credit for. In addition to encouraging kids to embrace fruits and vegetables, our school gardens help foster an understanding and appreciation of the natural world. Sitting beneath the towering sunflowers in this outdoor classroom, we feel the rough potato leaves and the smooth flower petals, listen to bees pollinating our flowers, hunt for bugs with magnifying glasses, smell mint, sage, and thyme, and taste crisp, spicy rainbow radishes. Learning is brought to life as every sense is engaged. Caring for plants in the school garden also instills the principles of environmental stewardship. It's delightful to watch as third graders take ownership of their cabbage plants by naming them, checking on them at every recess, and proudly showing them to their parents. These cabbages were part of a math lesson in which students measured their plants' height and diameter every week, just one example of garden integration with the Common Core curriculum standards. Here in Montana, a challenge with our garden program is that the school year doesn't overlap with the main growing season. In an effort to continue garden learning over the summer, I teach a Junior Master Gardener program for 3rd through 5th graders. Following a farm-to-school theme, the students learn basic gardening skills and how to harvest and prepare meals with fresh produce. We also visit local farms and help harvest the Gallatin Valley Food Bank's gardens, which make it possible for everyone in the community to enjoy fresh food. Besides being fun and useful, the Junior Master Gardener program undoubtedly lessens what teachers call summer learning loss. The students stay engaged in the science of the growing cycle, practice their math skills while converting recipes, and improve their writing by keeping a garden journal. And next month, we'll be building a greenhouse at Highlight Elementary to extend learning opportunities into the school year. This project is a collaboration between our 4th and 5th grade science, technology, engineering, and math, or STEM, club, and many local organizations. Plans are underway to use this greenhouse to continue to integrate lessons with our state and national core curriculum. My time with Food Court at Highlight Elementary has reinforced my belief in the value of outdoor experiential learning. If it were up to me, every school in Montana and across the country would have a program like this. To see what other Food Court service members are doing across the state to connect kids with real food, visit our blog at montanafoodcourt.org. I'm Erin Jackson for the Alternative Energy Resources Organization. AERO is a grassroots membership organization serving as Montana's hub for sustainable communities, inspiring change, connecting local leaders, and building capacity for success across the state for 40 years. If you'd like to get involved, check us out at www.aeromt.org. That's AEROMT.org.
Patricia Rosenleaf is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney. Thanks for listening, and please join Edwin O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.